Hello, Packers fans. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here from Lambeau Field, where, guys, it feels like we just ran a marathon. I think we're still trudging towards the water table, fully getting ready to settle down. It's not quite over yet. But the Green Bay Packers have wrapped up their 2023 NFL draft with a record-tying 13 picks. Spoon, you've covered a lot of drafts. How many years do you see 13 picks in the seven-round era?
Oh, no, never. I mean, I don't think there's ever been 13.
I don't think so either.
It was pretty amazing, and especially because there weren't any trades on the second day. Mm-hmm. Pretty much just stood pat where he was. I mean, there's not a lot you can do with seventh round picks. They're not really tradable, and sixth round picks aren't that great either. So I didn't expect him to move around too much, but he didn't at all.
Ryan, I'm going to jump to you then. As we said, 13 draft picks. They hit a hat trick on wide receivers, went for double dipped on tight ends, beefed up the front seven on defense. What are your overall impressions of this draft class that Brian Gutekunst has put together?
Yeah, and I think it's important. I mentioned this on Twitter today, to distinguish between draft approach and whether a draft is good, because we have no idea if this draft is good. We won't know for a couple years. It depends on if the players are good. We don't know if these guys can play. But from a draft approach standpoint, it's hard not to applaud Brian Gutekunst. He did what he needed to do in this draft. The first priority by far was surrounding Jordan Love with talent. Now, again, we don't know if he did, because we don't know how these guys will pan out, but stocked the cupboards. I mean, he put a lot of more options, targets around him. I think the biggest part of this draft, the part of this draft that stands out to me, is the two tight ends, mm-hmm. the second and third round. And it just gives Matt LaFleur so many options schematically with his offense. He's so multiple in what he does. If those guys boom, this is going to be a really exciting draft for Packers fans. And it's a lot on how they develop. But I think that he showed restraint where restraint was in order. I asked him after the draft, did you know kind of coming in with a weak safety class, you might just not be able to get your starting safety in this class? And, yeah, he had an idea of that. They didn't draft a safety until the seventh round. That's not going to be a starting safety. They didn't get a starting safety in this class. But if you're Brian Gutekunst and you're looking at where your team is now as it ventures into this new era with Jordan Love, they're not a safety away from winning the Super Bowl. Next year's class, and it's early, is supposed to be better at safety. If you're not a safety away from winning the Super Bowl, it doesn't really matter if you don't have a starting safety that's going to be the missing piece. What matters is providing a runway for Jordan Love, and that's what he prioritized. The other part of this, Cassidy, no offensive linemen. They have 13 offensive linemen. If they didn't get a tackle insurance long-term early in this draft in what was a very shallow tackle class, not a lot of point in bringing in offensive linemen in the mid to late rounds. So they didn't bother. They just continued to stack the cupboard. I think the draft approach was really solidly thought out and well executed. We'll just see if these picks hit or not.
This is such a testament in personalities. I said, give me your overall opinion of the draft. Spoon gave me 25 seconds. You gave me 3.5 minutes.
I have so much going on in my head right now. You know, late day three of the draft, my mind is just kind of like combusted already. So good luck with that.
Yeah. Was there anything in this draft, and I'm looking at the full class here, was there anything that surprised either one of you?
I was surprised at the risk Gutekunst took with injuries. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the guys, both tight ends have had pretty serious injuries. The kicker has had two injuries, you know, including an ACL. I'm trying to remember if any of the other guys did. I think Van Ness has been pretty clean, and I think the wide receiver has been pretty clean. Mm-hmm. But those are, you know, three, especially the tight ends. I mean, I know that they've played, and they came back and played in their senior years and everything, or in their final years, and they were very productive. But you just kind of wonder about that, whether there's any risk factor in there. And you know, I know they've been burned by that before, by guys who've been hurt And so that's the only thing that kind of struck me about it. But the other thing is that they just hit where the draft was strong. It just happened to be that they needed tight ends, and it was the strongest tight end class it's been in I don't know how long. And they needed some edge rushers and pass rushers, and it was a good draft for pass rushers. Terrible draft for offensive tackles, as you indicated, and they passed on Broderick Jones, who was probably the one guy who could have helped them right away. Or not right away, but could have been a you know, franchise tackle. So once they did that, you know, they just hit on what was the strength of the draft, and safety was not a strength of the draft.
Yeah, to your point, and I'm totally with you, that the medicals with Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft, there's some red flags there, and there's going to be, whether they boom or bust, a lot of that's going to be medical. Brian Gutekunst said it after Friday night, if not for those medicals, they might not get a chance to draft him where they did in the second and third round, because those are really talented guys, really athletic tight ends. Cassie, I think, to me, the thing that surprises me most is that I'm not really surprised. And usually, every year, I there's always kind of like a yeah, but. But as I look at the totality of the 13 picks and their draft philosophy, their draft approach, it all makes sense what they did. And I think Spoon's absolutely right. They hit. They were fortunate that their needs matched up with some deep classes, and they just hit it. I mean, getting two defensive linemen in the middle rounds, fourth and sixth round pick, Colby Wooden and
Carl Brooks.
They lost two defensive linemen. They lost Jaron Reed and Dean Lowry. They needed to add there. That depth on the defensive line was a big need. They were able to do that. Don't know if these guys can play, but they have good athletic numbers. They have, you know, Carl Brooks, my goodness, his production at the MAC is incredible.
Nothing but production.
It's like 30 and a half tackles for loss and 17 and a half sacks the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Give that guy a look.
Van Ness will be able to help him inside, too. Mm-hmm. So they did add, you know, as they said, versatility. You know, Brooks can kind of line up all over the place. You know, you can never add too many decent pass rushers, especially inside pass rushers. And they added some size and some long levered guys, which I know that most coaches just love to have guys who can – with really long arms who can keep blockers off them. So from that standpoint, you know, on paper, that looks good.
You know, I hate to go back to this, but I think the thing that maybe impressed me, Brian Gutekunst seemed to have a good idea, a good feel for where this team is as it transitions eras right now. If it's a bad safety class, don't just pick a guy to pick a guy. Don't just waste a pick. Yeah, they didn't get a starting safety in this draft. They needed one coming in. It's okay. It's okay because they're not a safety away from getting to a Super Bowl. You hit where the draft is strong. It's a thin offensive tackle class. Don't just get a fourth, fifth round offensive tackle.
And they've got 13 guys coming back in that unit.
So he didn't waste picks. He was able to.
You don't have to have great safeties if you got great pass rush.
Yeah,
and that's what he went for. And so if all the thing and a lot of things that have to, you know, fall through for him, but if Devontae Wyatt comes through and Quay Walker can be an outside guy and Van Ness can give him something and the defensive lineman, then the safety position isn't going to be a killer, because if you're getting after the quarterback, then, you know, you're not as susceptible.
If the safety only has to cover for 3 seconds, then...
Yeah, and you got good corners, too. It's not you have a bunch of slouches at corner.
I got a sense that Brian Gutekunst exercised some self-control and not going to chase things, which I think that's what GMs need to do.
Didn't he say that there were some guys he really liked that, you know, all of a sudden were gone or that... they passed up on, they didn't go and get him. So, yeah, he was patient. We'll see if that paid off.
Right.
For all of Urban Meyer's faults, one thing he did say that has always stuck with me is you build a championship team on the defensive line. That's where it starts. And it feels like that was a huge – for as much as we have focused on the pass catchers, and justifiably so, that was a huge get for them along that front seven. We talked a lot about their versatility, but also, and asked Brian Gutekunst this today, just about how speedy so many of them are, or at least twitchy, and that seems to be what you have to have if you're going to be negating the Patrick Mahomes and the Jalen Hurts of the worlds. Is this sort of just where we see defenses in the NFL going now?
Yeah, I mean, you have to have those kind of pass rushers. If you're going to be a team like Joe Barry's, which is, I'm not going to blitz hardly ever, you got to have guys who can rush the passer. I do think it's a little bit risky with their run defense. I don't know if they have, they don't really have like a big Fletcher Cox kind of guy, you know, or, you know, just a massive guy who can plug up the middle. They're just not going to be that kind of defense. And so their run defense might be a little sketchy, but, you know, it's all about passing these days. It's really about getting pass rush on people. And Barry, since he's not going to blitz, he's got to have guys up front who can rush the passer and get up the field.
They took a corner in the seventh round as well, Carrington Valentine. A lot of people almost seemed surprised that he was still sitting there when they took him. He was Mel Kiper's best available for a decent portion of the day.
Hey, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Make Mel Kiper happy.
Mel rarely, him and Packers GMs rarely mesh.
Really?
Like they don't see eye to eye.
Maybe that's why they waited so long to take Valentine.
Maybe that's why Mel was so quick to go on and say this is a great pick because they finally lined up.
It's slightly ironic that you've got a guy on one side, Love, and the guy on the other side now, Valentine. Who's to say if Carrington
well
Valentine?
Done.
Thank you.
Well done. That's fantastic.
They just need like a Cupid now. who's to say if Carrington Valentine will see the field a lot this year, at least as a corner?
Well, on special teams,
but
I think.
But on special teams.
I think he's supposed to be a pretty good special teams player.
He mentioned on his Zoom conference call with us several times how much he liked to play press man. And you watch his tape. He's a pretty sticky corner. I tweeted his quote about how much he enjoys playing press man, and you can imagine how much Packers fans jumped right over that right away and said, well, too bad for the kid.
Sorry to tell you, but Joe Barry's still your defensive coordinator.
Yeah, right.
Hate to ruin your dreams, Carrington, but that's not going to happen here in this defense. That being said, with Valentine, Anthony Johnson, maybe even Grant DuBose to an extent, but I would think especially Valentine and Johnson – you kind of look at their draft profiles and then you look at where they were drafted. They seem to have gone later than a lot of people expected. Why do you think that is?
Well, go ahead.
Not to be flippant about it, but I think that pre-draft mocks and reporting is a very inexact science. I mean, Sean Clifford.
That was my next point.
Fifth round, a lot higher than people thought. The guys that know are the guys that are doing the drafting. It's not you don't retroactively say, well, this guy was supposed to go in the seventh round. He went in the fifth. And this guy was supposed to go in the fifth round. Went to seventh. These guys went where they're supposed to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't take the draft guides as gospel.
Right.
They're guidelines. And these guys do a lot of really good work. Yep. They're a lot better than they used to be. And they have incredible detail on these guys. But it's all a crapshoot. It's the same reason why, you know, Detroit took the Alabama running back in the first round. Nobody had him as, you know, a first rounder at that point. It's just every team sees it differently. And there, as far as we know, 12 teams could have seen it that same way. But you don't know, and because 12 teams didn't have that pick.
And it's why poor Will Levis was sitting in a green room all night when he never should have been there in the first place.
You know, this reminds me of what Pete Doherty and I talk about all the time. Spoon, I'm sure you run into the same thing. When I was doing the draft previews, I ran into the same thing. The more scouts you talk to, the more differing opinions you get, the more disagreement you get. So when I say the draft guides are inexact, even internal evaluations from team to team are inexact. It takes one team to love one guy and then they get drafted. So it's amazing. The more scouts, the more opinions you get, the more dissension and disagreement you get in this process.
And then you might stumble upon a Brock Purdy. That being said, let's talk about the quarterback here for a second. Brian Gutekunst said earlier this week they wanted to get a third quarterback on the roster. Technically, they have one now with Sean Clifford out of Penn State. Guy's a four-year starter. coming out of a huge conference, has played in some of the biggest games in college football. And I think, I can't remember which scout, I apologize, said that, you know, that that was part of it.
Milton Hendricks.
Thank you. Yeah. Brian Gutekunst also talked about, like, his personality and wanting that sort of attitude in the locker room. Do you draft a personality in the fifth round? I mean, this...
That sounds to me like he's could be a nice number three, you know? Just a guy that is smart, can add something to the room. You know, I mean, there is something to be said for, you know, some guy who runs the scout team and he just, like, kicks the defense's butt, you know? I mean, like, he's savvy and he's competitive and he raises the level of the scout team and stuff like that. Who knows if he can play? I mean, he's never going to be a starter in the NFL. Probably he'll start for 10 years and be the next Joe Montana because I just said that.
He's going to quote you in his biography,
I know,
too.
Right? Right? Yeah, remember that podcast?
And boy, when that was something.
But,
you know the scene in Ted Lasso when Roy pulls out the newspaper of what Trent wrote about him?
Yeah, exactly.
Be Sean Clifford with you.
I think they're going to have to keep fishing for quarterbacks. And, after this draft, there will be maybe some quarterbacks who get cut. After June 1, there might be some quarterbacks who get cut. And there will be some quarterbacks who get cut after the cutdowns in August. And so they just got to keep fishing and you know, see what happens with the other two guys.
I think two things with Sean Clifford. I think first, I asked Milt Hendrickson this, and he said what he was supposed to say. We felt good taking him with the value where we took him. But he did not change my mind. He was the 11th quarterback taken. The Packers had to get a quarterback. They had two on the roster. When there's already 10 to go.
And there was a run going on quarterbacks at the time.
Was there a quarterback taken after Sean Clifford? I honestly don't know. I didn't.
Was Stetson Bennett taken before?
No, he was before. He was before.
Yeah, there must have been somebody after.
I would think so. It's the fifth round, so I would think that there was.
Yeah.
But 11 was tied at the time.
Max Dugan, maybe?
Yeah, Max Dugan was taken the seventh.
11 was – okay, so 11 was tied, and Max Dugan puts it over the top. This is the most quarterbacks that have ever been drafted in a seven-round draft. 11 tied – Sean Clifford tied 1995. So this was an unprecedented run of quarterbacks, and they had to get a quarterback. That might – encourage you to take a guy to make sure you've got a guy that you like maybe two rounds later, but you got to get him. And so I think that's part of it. And I wonder if, you know, you're trying to – this draft is about building for Jordan Love, inspiring confidence, and Jordan Love is going to be the next step. Bringing in a guy that is a good character guy and not in any way going to challenge Jordan Love competitively is not the worst thing. You can see him fitting in the locker room in this quarterback dynamic. I don't think they base the pick off that, but I don't think it hurts either.
He is also 3 months older than Jordan Love, so a nice mentor maybe for him. Let's see who else we got here. Let's go ahead and just talk about this so that we can say we talked about it. The kicker. He was drafted in the sixth round, he had an ACL tear 2 years ago. He had a shoulder injury in 2021 as well. He did kick the entirety of 2022 with a brace on. He said the combine was the first time he was able to work out for teams or show teams what he could do with the brace off since tearing the ACL. Do you just assume that? I think he's 71% overall in his career at Auburn. It drops back drastically when you get 50 and beyond, down to 58%, I want to say. Do you just assume he'll be better 2 years off an ACL tear without a brace?
I didn't know a guy could kick with a brace on. I was on his plant leg. It's not on his kicking leg.
Yes, that's
leg.
A good point.
But still, that just got to screw you up completely. So I don't know how you evaluate that. I guess they evaluated him based on what they saw at the combine and in pro day. He's got a strong leg, and he hit some clutch field goals. I think he won a game in overtime, and I think he hit a couple of really clutch ones, and that's...
He's a good big moment kicker.
Something that is big, but he's going to have to be, he's going to have to prove he's consistent, you know? I mean, his brother, didn't he struggle early on? And you know, it took him some time to get his...
And then he left the SEC as, like, the all-time leading scorer.
Yeah, I mean, in the pros.
Do you remember that week two Vikings-Packers tie when Daniel Carlson... Anders Carlson's brother missed three field goals.
And then he
ended up getting cut. And
yeah.
He's turned it around. He's been a good kicker for the Raiders, but he did struggle early on. Good bloodlines there. I don't know anything
big
about kickers.
Big kid, 6'5".
Maybe Rich Bisaccia is to credit for Daniel Carlson's turnaround.
Could be.
If that's the case, could he be the key for Anders Carlson?
Well, that's where I was going to go with that. Is I don't know anything about kickers, but I'm pretty sure Rich Bisaccia does. Brian Gutekunst said that the accuracy issues from range he thought were the injuries, and he said you got to stay healthy. It's not an excuse, but that was in their evaluation. That was why they thought that he struggled. It was inconsistent with accuracy from range. But at the end of the day, I don't know anything about kickers. I'm going to ride with Rich Bisaccia's evaluation until I see otherwise.
What did he say he started? Did he say he started kicking after 6 months? Or he was back after like six months?
He said
and then 9 months he was back on the...
The football season started 9 months after the tear and the surgery.
Yeah, but he said something about being like... Something about doing stuff after 6 months,
right.
Even 9 months. That's pretty, you know. We've seen, you know, credible athletes like Elgton Jenkins struggle after 9 months on an ACL. So, they saw something in him, and I'm interested to see what he can do. But they have to. Just like they moved on from Aaron Rodgers, they have to move on from Mason Crosby at some point. And if you're going to do it, you know, don't do it in a year when you think you're going to the Super Bowl. And I don't think anyone thinks they're going to the Super Bowl this year.
Let
so it's
kid,
probably a good year to switch kickers.
Let the kid figure out Lambeau for a year, if he makes the team, which, you know, he's got a decent shot.
They'll do everything to let him make the team.
It's money. It's money. Mason Crosby's not cheap. He's a veteran kicker, and I've used this analogy before, but having a veteran big-time kicker that costs money on this team that's rebuilding and not going to win the Super Bowl this year, it's kind of like having an elite closer on a 70-win baseball team. You have a 90-win baseball team, you're going to be playing in October, you got to have a guy that can close the ninth inning.
Crosby,
you're going to win 70 games, not so much.
Crosby will kick this year. As long as he wants to play, I almost guarantee
will
that
he will kicking
kick
for the
somewhere.
Green Bay Packers?
It's going to be somewhere. I don't know if it's going to be here. It might be. It could be somewhere else. But some kicker is going to fail. Some kicker is going to get hurt. You know, something's going to go wrong somewhere, and there will be a place for Mason Crosby.
My prediction is no, he will not.
Could you see them cutting Mason Crosby and him being like, you know what, I'll just retire. 6 games into the season, Carlson gets hurt. Brian Gutekunst calls up Mason and is like, can I borrow you for a few more weeks?
He's not doing that.
You
I'll
don't
tell
think
you
so?
That. No, no.
There have been kickers that have done that.
You know what I think
Mason
is...
Mason Crosby's not coming back for 3
too
weeks.
Too prideful.
You know what I think is the more interesting debate when it comes to whether or not they might reunite with a veteran is Adrian Amos at this point. And I'm not expecting it because I don't know if they have the cap to do it. I really don't know. You know better than me. But I asked Brian Gutekunst about it after the conclusion of the draft, not drafting a starting safety, and he said he played at a high level for us last year. He can still play at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
He said that they have been in communication and that he's not closing the door. If they, you know, Adrian Amos at this point, he's still available for a reason. He's not going to break the bank.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's a reunion there.
There could be. I mean, yeah, he's not going to. I wouldn't be surprised at this point. I think they got to go through OTAs. I think it's one of those things that wouldn't happen until either mini camp or before training camp. Maybe it's soon. The one thing that kind of got my brain gears going was that he said they still have to talk about Jordan Love's fifth-year option.
Mm-hmm.
to me, it sounds like they're trying to do something to save some cap money. Now, I think his cap number is about $4 million this year or something like that. Does that sound right?
And it goes to 20.
And it goes to 20 next year.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they got some kind of a goofy plan where they guarantee his $4 million this year and add, I don't know if you can do that. I don't know if you can do that without an option year. I honest to God don't know. But they know he's going to be their quarterback next year and the year after. So maybe there's something they can do to save money, which would allow them to sign Amos.
Well, what Brian Gutekunst did say before the draft was that he felt like there were still things that could be done, but that they would with the cap, but that they would take the step at a time as it comes. Mm-hmm. And so you might not be wrong, Spoon. I mean,
that
might be one
you,
of the things.
Why wouldn't you have done it by now? Yeah. I mean,
but he said no step by step.
So that being said, because he also reiterated today.
No, I mean, but why wouldn't you do the fifth year option on Love? You're going to do it. There's no question. But I think Russ Ball is in his mad scientist suit and doing something.
So all of that to say, and this is what I wanted to get your opinion on. Based on from what you know of the situation and what Brian Gutekunst said today about, you know, obviously we are committed to Jordan when asked about the fifth year option, you think it's purely money, not anything about wanting to see him on the field?
No. I'm if they don't do the fifth year option, they're idiots.
Crazy. Yeah, that's
they
crazy.
Are just yeah. stupid. No. I don't care if it's $20 million. If he stinks, it's worth the risk. Mm-hmm. You know, it's worth the $20 million risk.
You're invested at this point.
Yeah.
You're pot committed on Jordan Love. To at least know if he stinks, you got to be darn sure he stinks.
Yeah.
You got to know beyond reasonable shadow of a doubt that he is terrible before you don't commit to it. They're pot committed.
That would be the dumbest thing in the world to trade Aaron Rodgers and then
not
do the fifth-year option on the guy. So.
I did want to go back to special teams really quick because there was one other thing I wanted to ask y'all about. this I didn't want to ask. I just wanted to know, Lucas Van Ness, from what I read, is a pretty decent little blocker on special teams, meaning like he can block a kick, block a punt.
Yeah, he can rush off the edge. Yeah, he's got really long arms.
He might be coming for your job, Jair Alexander.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's about – I don't think it's about field goals. It's about block punts. You know, it's about him rushing from
goals.
The outside. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Jair Alexander doesn't rush on punts, but Lucas Van Ness can. I mean, a linebacker with really long arms can be. Tucker Kraft did too. I think Tucker Kraft was a really good special teams. Didn't he block a punt
and
too?
And Colby Wooden, I want to say, blocked a kick maybe?
Yeah. So they got all these guys with like freaky arms, so I'm sure they'll figure out a way to use them.
And then Jaden Reed, could we see? I feel like Keyshawn Nixon is pretty entrenched as the kickoff returner, but he was used on punt return just because they had to have somebody. Could you see Jaden Reed maybe pushing for that punt return spot?
I don't see that, but I want to go back to your other point. Because I remember asking Brian Gutekunst about Quay Walker's special teams ability last year. He was the special teams newcomer of the year as a freshman at Georgia. First-round pick, just like Lucas Van Ness. And I will never forget that Brian – I thought it was a good question. He's special teams newcomer of the year. You just hired Rich Bisacci. Your special teams ruined your season last year. And Ryan Gutekunst effectively scoffed at me. He was like, yeah, we're not drafting him for that. And I just looked it up. Quay Walker had 78 special teams reps, which was far down the list of special teams reps. So it's not like he didn't play it. But I would imagine the same for Lucas Van Ness.
Well, it could be.
Drafting him for that, but they can use him.
Yeah, I mean, it's
78 reps, less than 100 reps.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I think Rashawn Gary plays some special teams. I'm not saying they're going to use him on kickoff returns or anything.
Right.
But I think he could rush a punt. Now, I remember Josiah DeGuara tore his ACL on like the second to last on their last punt, a meaningless punt at the end of a game. So yeah, there is risk with it. Special teams is a violent time, and so I don't know if they would do it. But yeah, I'll bet you he winds up playing some special teams. And by the way, I disagree. I think Reed's going to be their punt returner.
You think so?
I do. I mean, Keyshawn Nixon's strength is kickoff returns. Mm-hmm. He did pretty well on punt returns, but this kid is like gung ho about it and pretty good. His average was pretty good. So
he housed a couple of them too.
Yeah, it's a different skill. And, Keyshawn Nixon's still not really a skilled punt returner, but. Mm-hmm.
And Keyshawn Nixon will be the first person to admit that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I could see him being a punt returner.
As a rookie,
they would have a heck of a kick return game if he was any good.
As a rookie, and I'm very possibly the only one actually interested in this, but as a rookie, Rashawn Gary had 33 special teams reps, and that's pretty similar situation because they had Z and P, and Lucas Van Ness probably even play more because Rashawn Gary's coming back off the ACL, but he's, fits in as the third rusher eventually. Just as far as the punt return goes, I would keep Keyshawn Nixon there because I liked every time he touched the football. Jaden Reed can obviously do it. I don't know what they'll do.
Keyshawn there and let Jaden sort of get some reps there.
He'll get a lot of opportunities.
Try Jaden there in the preseason for sure. Just see what he does.
Well, I think Keyshawn Nixon's going to have a role on defense. Mm-hmm. And I think that...
I think he is their nickel.
Do you think he has a role on offense?
Could too.
I think it's less likely now after this draft.
Yeah,
but
I think so too.
I think they kind of stocked the cupboard, but going into the draft, they're like, well...
I think
Keyshawn Nixon
might take his snaps there, but
I also think he's a pest and he will bug Matt LaFleur about
yes,
it till he gets
yeah.
on the field for offense.
Look, I liked every because it's fun, right? He's good special teams play. I've said this before, like seeing a great punt, I think is fun. That's fun for me. Every time Keyshawn Nixon touched the football, that was fun. Mm-hmm. So they want to give him the football. Let's have fun.
I'd like to see him get a real opportunity to play at nickel. Like, put him there and let's find out whether he can do it or not, because the guy's fast. He tackles pretty violently, mm-hmm.
You gotta be a little crazy in the head to play nickel too, and I think he's perfect for it.
Yeah, he might be. I mean, they sure
that dirt on the back of his neck.
Yeah. Who's the best nickel in the NFL right now, in your opinion?
Well,
because I have my opinion and it backs up my argument, but I'm seeing if we're on the same page.
I mean, I don't know. Jalen Ramsey is probably one of the best corners overall in the NFL.
Who's that Bills?
Plays in the nickel.
Who's that Bills nickel? I can't remember his name right now. I know he's really highly thought of.
Who are you thinking? I would put
Jalen and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson up there, and they're both willing to charge hell with a water pistol, and that's what you got to do to be able to play nickel, and I feel like Keyshawn Nixon would do that.
Yeah, you got to be aggressive. Yeah.
We got really far off topic from the draft. A guy we haven't mentioned, Lou Nichols III, running back out of Central Michigan, drafted in the 7th round. Again, clarify, he's a 7th rounder. What that role might be if there's a 53-man spot for him is up in the air. Interestingly enough, I'm curious how much y'all think maybe the Mac is what was his knock there. Because his 2021 season, again, the competition's different. He led the entire FBS at the end of the year. He was averaging 142 yards a game on the ground, and he also was a nice little supplemental pass-catching option. He wasn't Aaron Jones almost 50-50, but he scored a few times through the air, and he told us on the Zoom it was mostly – checkdowns and swings, but he was there as an option, and he feels like that's something he can do.
There is an Aaron Jones connection there.
That's true.
Aaron Jones's college running backs coach at UTEP coached Lou Nichols III at Central Michigan. Was running backs coach at Central Michigan. So he said that he's seen a lot of Aaron Jones runs because they ran the same things. Mm-hmm. I think the big knock on him, without talking to anyone about him yet, is that that 2021 was not sustained. He dropped off big last year. He had a toe injury that cost him a couple games. But Cassie, I thought you got a pretty good quote from him about running in cold weather. He might be watching Aaron Jones tape, but he sounded a little to me like A.J. Dillon when he answered your question about running in cold weather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said when it gets colder, people don't wrap up and you get stronger.
And I was like, oh, that's A.J. Dillon right there.
He said he's from Detroit. He played at Central Michigan. Only thing he's ever run in is cold weather, just about. Mm-hmm. So could be interesting. Speaking of cold weather, an aside, because we forgot to mention this, so just real quick. Anders Carlson kicked at Auburn, but he he grew up in Colorado and kicked all throughout high school in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So he has kicked in the snow.
Colorado cold is not Wisconsin.
That's
cold.
What I was thinking too. You know, he was like, yeah, I'm from Colorado Springs. Like, no, it's not the same thing.
It's colder than Auburn.
Yeah, it's colder than Auburn, yes. Yeah. It's also how many feet above sea level where, you know,
You got to, like, take oxygen.
But Mason Crosby did it, you know.
Yeah.
He managed it. He figured it out.
Speaking of guys who sort of dropped off in 2022, let's talk for just a minute about Dontayvion Wicks, who prefers to be called Tay, from Virginia, had a phenomenal 2021 season and then took a serious drop off in 2022. He said, and I mentioned this to Ryan when right after he got drafted, I have a really good friend that covers that team, and she immediately texted me this, and then Tay said the same thing on his Zoom. That was a brand new coaching staff that came in. Apparently there was some butting of heads. Then he had an injury. Is that a valid excuse?
Yeah. I mean, if the system isn't good, you'd still like to think that anybody who, you know, a really good player is going to be good in any system. It doesn't really matter. But he did. He did have a monster year his junior year, and then it fell off. I think it's one of those things where the Packers said, okay, you know, he's going to get bumped by people for that bad senior year. We'll take a chance and say he's going to be the guy who was his junior year.
I think the bigger issue than the production dip is the 4.6 240, and he, I guess he ran 4.57 as pro day, but he's got good size at 6'1", 206. That's Brian Gutekunst's size, but
he's got almost exact numbers as Davante Adams.
Mm.
Almost precisely. He's even better in a couple of things. Got the same kind of Vita. Davante Adams was the 4.65.
Yeah, he was slow at his combine. I remember that being a thing.
Yeah, he was.
Something else he has in common with Davante Adams when Adams was a young guy. When Tay, look, they're both Tay. When Tay was young, he struggled with drops this past year.
Yeah.
But so did Christian Watson. And that feels like that was something the Packers were able to address. So is that as much of a concern as it may be?
It's always a concern. I mean, he said they were focus drops, I think.
What is a focus drop?
Means, you know, you're trying to run with the ball before you got it. Mm. Like, you're just not locked in on catching it.
Christian Watson has the same issue, or had the same issue coming out of North Dakota State. You take the ball, right as the ball is closing in on your catch radius, you take your eyes off the football.
Billy Gonzalez used to do this drill at Florida where he put a small dot on the tip of the football, and it was a different color on every football. And it was small enough that you couldn't see it from far away, but big enough that you could see it when the football was where it should be. And you had to yell out the color of the dot before you could catch it.
I've been doing that with my Little League guys for a long time. Yeah.
You were a coach of the year.
Put a little green, red, or blue dot on the baseball, and they have to call it. They always cheat, though. You know, they always look.
Memorize it.
But, yeah.
I had my best friend in life is a baseball aficionado, a great baseball player himself, and really just knows the game. I don't know if you ever did this, but he said, put a number on the ball and have them read the number. Have you ever done that? I've never tried that.
Mm-mm.
But that was just...
It feels like it would take a lot harder than the color.
Yeah. Oh, a lot harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was just an aside. Yeah.
Interesting.
Day three of the draft.
Look at you on the cutting edge of coaching, Spoon.
Yeah.
You could be the next big thing.
Matt LaFleur, hire this man.
If only
right
the
here.
Packers would listen to you. I feel like we've hit just about everyone. Oh, last thing, I did just want to say this on the last guy the Packers drafted, Grant DuBose out of Charlotte. Has one of the, you know, we're always looking for stories as journalists, has probably the most incredible story of anybody in this draft, which I thought was pretty cool. Well, some of the earlier guys, you know, they've all gone through adversity in their own ways. Grant DuBose was one of the programs that was shut down in 2020 due to COVID. He worked four jobs during that year. He told us tonight he worked at Walmart. He did grocery delivery. He worked at the commissary. There's a military base there in Birmingham, in Montgomery. And he worked, he said he was doing one other thing, and now I can't even remember what it was. But anyways, and basically just took a shot. He had a former coach that was on the staff at Charlotte and was like, just come up here and try out. And they said he ran three routes, and they offered him a position on the team. And now he's in the NFL, at least for a little while. So, good for him.
Sometimes you gotta work. You gotta work.
Yeah.
You know, there was someone last year. Who was it? Who was a DoorDash?
Yeah, there was guy. Somebody on this Packers team.
Yeah, who was that? Who was doing DoorDash while he was out of work?
And I can't remember. Say Kadar Holman might have had that.
Yeah.
Once upon a time,
it's somebody that was on the team this past last year.
Yeah, yeah, and I can't remember if it was like a practice squad guy or someone who
I
just got.
I
want
to say it was like a corner.
Yeah, you wrote about this.
Like maybe was it like Ennis Gaines or somebody?
Could have been. Anyway, it was
Shamar
someone.
John Charles. Yeah. I think it was sure a corner.
Might have been Shamar John Charles.
Before we get ready to start landing this plane, go ahead and put your trays in the upright position. Clean up your trash. Is there anyone from this class that you think will be a bust? And is there anyone that you think will be a darling, a diamond in the rough?
I don't really have an opinion on that. I don't know enough about these guys to make that kind of a
that's fair.
Prediction.
Okay, let me ask this question instead then. Is there anything, if you were the GM, you would have done differently? Or do you feel like this was a pretty solid, grade the performance. There we go. Grade this draft.
I don't grade drafts.
Play my game, Spoon.
No. I would have taken Broderick Jones over Lucas Van Ness. That's the only thing I would have done.
Yeah, I understand that, but I can't fault them for doing it either. And it'll be very interesting to see which of those players becomes the better player.
Where did Broderick Jones go?
14, right after.
No, like what team?
He went to Pittsburgh, didn't
yep.
he? Was it Pittsburgh? No, it was
New England.
No.
If it was Pittsburgh, that would be great.
It was because someone traded.
I'm going to look it up while you say what you were going to say.
Who the heck was it? Doggone it. He went right after Van Ness.
Yeah. He went to Pittsburgh. So maybe Broderick Jones and Lucas Van Ness will line up across from each other later this year.
Maybe this will be like.
And we'll get to see mano a mano.
Yeah. Maybe this will be like Kevin King and TJ Watt. We'll see what happened.
Yep.
I don't do draft trades either.
No fun.
Well, it's impossible.
I know.
It's a fool's
errand.
It takes 2 years.
I'll give him an incomplete.
I'll give him a very complete for 13 picks.
TBD.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm looking forward to the most in terms of what I'm most interested to find out and track and just curious about is the development of these two tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be very fascinating. If they both boom, boy, that does a lot for this offense. The other thing, too, is just because, you know, you double dip doesn't mean it works out. I mean, somewhere on the spectrum of Gronkowski and football player Aaron Hernandez, which worked very, very well.
Same thing, yeah.
And 2012, the Indianapolis Colts drafted Andrew Luck, first overall. Second round, they took tight end out of Stanford, Kobe Fleener. Third round, they took a tight end out of Syracuse, Dwayne Allen. That they both busted. So somewhere between Gronk and Hernandez on the field and Kobe Fleener and Dwayne Allen, where do Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft fall on that spectrum? That will be fascinating.
I like the clarifier there.
On the field.
I went up to Florida Stadium the day they took a jackhammer to Aaron Hernandez All-American brick. Watched him take it up. Now there's just
an
empty space.
He was a quality football player, and that's where you leave the praises right there.
Also, I feel like we just have to acknowledge this. The Green Bay Packers cheeseheads drafted players with the names Kraft and Colby back-to-back. That's funny, Spoon.
There is something to be said for seeing Kraft on the back of a Packers
they
uniform.
Got,
that's tremendous work.
They got Kraft cheese, Colby cheese, Valentine, love. They are just all
You don't
about
have the
some...
experience of going to every city back when there used to be newspapers and you would pick up the newspaper you know, at the airport on the way home and after a Packer loss, it would always be cheese related. It was just like
the headline?
Every single time it'd be cheese related. And probably in our own, you know, market, cheese is like way overdone, you know, when they win.
Yeah.
You know, it's always something about cheese. So come on, let's be original.
The jokes are there. You got to take them even if they're cheesy. And with that, we're going
to
wrap this up. I'm
going to
give y'all.
I'm going to give y'all
30 seconds. If you got any final thoughts?
I'm not even kidding, Cassidy. That was going to be my last 30 seconds.
Oh well,
you just stole my thunder. No, I can appreciate good wordplay, and I do think that there's something to be said about Kraft and Colby going in the same draft to the Packers. I'll give you that one.
Spoon is just ready for
you
this.
You needed
to be
like
done.
A sharp.
I have worked like 70 hours this week, and I don't even know. I can't even feel my brain anymore.
I know.
So
I don't have anything left. All I can say is on to the next era. You know, Aaron Rodgers' era is over, and on to the next one. And nothing really changes for us. It's just on to the next next guy.
I feel like yours is more significant than mine. You hit the better note than Kraft and.
I don't know.
We'll see you back for rookie minicamp, which should be next weekend.
That's right.
Or the weekend after that.
Okay, you told me that it could be the weekend after that, and I made tentative plans to go see Taylor Swift in Nashville this coming weekend, and then everybody in the media auditorium yesterday told me it was next weekend. Somebody had even asked
it's
PR.
It's always the next weekend.
Not always.
It has been.
No, there's been a week time when it's been 2 weeks later.
I don't know if it was under McCarthy, if I get sick during rookie minicamp, don't check my Instagram stories.
I'm not going to be there, you guys.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm totally serious. I got something.
Are you going to see Taylor Swift in Nashville?
Please say yes. Please say that's the reason.
Listen, if I can't go see her in Nashville, I am going to see her in Chicago on June 2nd, which means there is an OTA earlier that day. So we're going to be writing quick. We're getting stuff done. I got to be on the road by 3:00.
You just go do that.
Y'all just mark your calendars. With that, we're going to wrap this sucker up. We still have more wrap-up coverage for you coming from the NFL draft on PackersNews.com. As well as a full list of UDFAs as we get them. Is that correct, Spoon?
Yeah, it's pretty much done.
Okay, so check PackersNews.com for that as well, and we will see you maybe next week. we'll keep you updated as the dates for Rookie Minicamp do become available. Thanks so much, guys. We'll see you next time. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. 19!